Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about the healthcare issues that are important to you. Whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years, we're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. According to Million Hearts, which is a national initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes within 5 years and is co-led by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, every 34 seconds in the U.S., an adult dies from cardiovascular disease. In this episode, we're going to talk with a primary care provider and a cardiovascular physician about the preventive measures we should be taking to keep our hearts healthy and strong for years to come. But first, founded in Port Charlotte, Florida in 2008 and now headquartered in Fort Myers, Millennium Physician Group has quickly become the leading independent physician group with more than 800 healthcare providers across the Southeast. Nationally recognized as a leader in value-based care with consistently high levels of physician engagement, Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. We just want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more and schedule your primary care visit online at millenniumphysician.com. Our first guest today is physician assistant Mark St. Lawrence from the Millennium Clinic on Bay Meadows Road East. Mark, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Michelle.
Well, it is Heart Health Month and in February, and you know, people start with their primary care physician. I mean, that your healthcare definitely starts there. So let's talk about when a patient comes to see you regarding their heart health.
It is, you know, it's a very special visit, you know, because, you know, earlier and earlier we're seeing more even younger, you know, patients worried about it because of either their family history, their parents, their grandparents. So they're questioning, you know, what do I need to do, you know, for my health to go forward? And that really starts at that, you know, that physical that we do. And we take an overall look of their cardiovascular risk and where, you know, their diet and exercise are today.
Mm-hmm. What are some risk factors? You know, we know gender, age, family history, but are there more direct risk factors we need to be thinking about too?
Well, the hardest thing about, you know, today's society is, you know, there's a lot of people that are not getting enough cardiovascular exercise. You know, we're homebodies. We love the TV. We love video games. You know, so, you know, I think we have a host of issues that we've taken for granted. And, you know, at times we're trying to play catch up with our heart health.
Yeah, agreed. And fast food doesn't help. And, you know, you guys, I know for a fact that our physicians and providers are always talking about movement. You know, just get up and walk around every now and then and, you know, close those rings on you. If I don't close a stand ring on my watch in a day, I'm like super upset with myself. You know, just get up once an hour and move around.
It's true. I mean, life has become very easy for a lot of us. You know, I mean, you know, even in my life, you know, it's easier to have it delivered, you know, to the back of your car when you go over shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not even moving through, you know, doing our grocery shopping anymore. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of ease in our life, but yes, it's going to take a toll in our later years. So, you mm-hmm. know, thinking about it sooner, you know, and getting ahead of that curve.
How do you encourage patients to be more heart conscious?
It is difficult. It is very difficult because, again, you know, if we're coming out of an age of, you know, this independence and now, you know, we're out on our own and, you know, we really don't have that, you know, very good direction to continue a very active lifestyle. You know, because we've transitioned. Now we're working, we're sitting at a desk for hours of a day. You know, and, you know, I even, you know, yes, I take these apps and those type of things that are beneficial, you know, to get people moving, you know, because my patients, I tell them, you know, they have to schedule their activity, their aerobic activity. They have to schedule it because if they just think they want to do it, it won't get done.
Right.
You know, so if they schedule it like a normal event two or three times a week, then they're, you know, more conscious of doing it, you know, because they've scheduled it.
When your patients come in for screenings like high blood pressure, cholesterol, and their numbers are elevated, what are you doing to help them bring those numbers back to where they should be?
Right. You know, and, you know, it goes to the root cause again. You know, if they're exercising, if they're eating right, you know, if they have any genetic issues of why they would have those, you know, we address them right then and there. You know, most of the time, you know, it's normally lifestyle, you know, a little bit too sedentary. They have a little bit too much weight, you know, and they just don't know how to eat right. And, you know, just changing a few meals a week and getting out and just starting that activity level.
Yeah. At what point do you refer them to a cardiologist?
When, you know, the cardiologists, you know, are very, you know, implemental in everything that we do for heart health. You know, the patient that becomes non-respondent to our early methods of either dietary change, activity change, you know, those are first initial if medication is needed. And then, of course, if at any time, if there's any progression of the worrisome of a heart attack or early cardiovascular disease that, you know, they say, well, when I do work out, when I do activity, I get short of breath, I have chest pain, you know, those type of things, you know, we initially try to see on an EKG in the office, but then those next steps of a cardiac workup and stress test and nuclear stress test, those are done by the cardiologist for us.
Right, right. And, you know, high blood pressure and stress and all of that are factors as well, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with our, you know, and again, you know, ranging from our 20-somethings all the way, you know, up to retirement age, you know, stress plays a huge role, you know, in how our body responds. So if it's home life, work life, you know, anything, life in general, that is causing it, you know, is going to have an adverse effect on our cardiovascular health.
Right. And how important, though, is knowing our numbers? You know your blood pressure, know your cholesterol. How important is that?
Well, you know, it's as important as, you know, knowing your address. I mean, because that is that first thing that you need to know. You know, why am I getting a headache 3 days a week? Why am I, you know, not wanting to exercise? Why do I get fatigued? You know, all those things, you know, if that one stop at, you know, when you're working out at your fitness center, you know, you get a bad number, you go to a grocery store, you get a bad number, you know, those are the key signals of, you know, something is changing within you.
Right. Well, Mark St. Lawrence, physician assistant from our Millennium Clinic on Bay Meadows Road East in Jacksonville, thank you so much for your time and helping us understand a little bit more about what happens at the primary care level with our heart health.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Coming up next, we're going to continue our conversation with a cardiovascular physician about prevention and keeping our heart healthy. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormack. Every week, we're talking about the healthcare issues that are important to you. Whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years, we're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. According to Million Hearts, which is a national initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes within 5 years and is co-led by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Every 34 seconds in the U.S., an adult dies from cardiovascular disease. In this episode, we're going to talk with a primary care provider and a cardiovascular physician about the preventive measures we should be taking to keep our hearts healthy and strong for years to come. Joining us now is Dr. Yasan Khatib. He is the president of First Coast Cardiovascular Institute. And Dr. Khatib, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, Heart Health Month is February, but I don't think there's ever a time not to talk about heart health. We're going to get to that in just a second. But first of all, welcome to the show and give us a little bit of background about you.
I'm an interventional cardiologist, and I focus on endovascular medicine. That's a medicine where we fix vessels from within without cutting the patient open. I also focus on prevention in cardiovascular health and diagnosis and treatment. I belong to a group, First Coast Cardiovascular Institute, 14 wonderful cardiologists and 17 nurse practitioners and physician assistants, and pulmonary doctors and sleep doctors and wound doctors. I've been proud to serve the First Coast since 2002.
Yeah, you have offices. I saw Fleming Island, right? And where else?
We're in all three counties of Duval, Clay, and Putnam, with multiple locations convenient for patients. And we've been blessed also to grow into Southern Georgia over the past few years.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, let's talk about why it's important, first of all, to have an entire month dedicated to heart health, but what should we know, you know, beyond that? So let's just starting with that, because the leading cause of death in the United States is cardiovascular related. Am I right?
And preventable cardiovascular related. Okay. So unlike a lot of the death where, you know, maybe it's less preventable. I mean, cardiovascular mortality is very calculated. I can take your numbers now, plug them into an equation. I'm going to tell you what is your risk over the next 10 years of a stroke, of a heart attack, God forbid, on you, of course, but you get the gist. You know, I cannot do that with that level of reliability for colon cancer or breast cancer or things. But with cardiovascular health, it's almost down to a math now. You know, based on your cholesterol, whether you smoke or not, and how much you smoke for how long, your blood pressure number, very, very important number, your weight, your sedentary lifestyle. Those all are calculatable things. We plug them into an equation, and I will tell you your low, medium, or high risk, and exactly how much is your risk. So it's never, you know, boring or cliche to talk about cardiovascular health, because prevention does work.
What do you tell patients? What's the first step? You know, if the most common type of heart disease is coronary artery disease, then
correct.
How is that preventable?
So I take us one step back. Actually, the most common disease is hypertension.
Okay.
Because we still label that we're possessive people. The cardiovascular doctors, we like to own it all. So hypertension, we also call cardiovascular disease because it is one of the mothers of all diseases. Hypertension, diabetes, and smoking are the mothers of all the ailments, or the majority of the ailments that come down the path. Okay. Now, CAD, or coronary artery disease, that's blockage of the heart vessels, very, very important. I mean, it leads to basically the vast majority of the heart attacks that you hear about. You know, you hear people talking about, oh, my cousin had the Widowmaker or whatever, and they saved him or her last minute. And that's basically blockage within the heart vessels that occurs over time. Time as in years, if not decades, of bad habits or bad numbers or both, in addition to an element of genetics. And so if you know that your mother or father had a heart attack at the age of 40 without being a smoker, you ought to be extremely cautious with your own numbers. And you need to know your numbers at the age of 20, not at the age of 40, because you happen to that, you know, not so small minority that's predisposed genetically. But otherwise, the vast majority of people in North America, they get heart disease from preventable causes. And so going back, CAD is very important. Coronary artery disease is very important because that's where it kind of flashes us in the face. A heart attack is real. You know, people die. People die in their sleep, okay? Or they come super sick. And then sometimes they survive with heart failure, sometimes they survive intact. But all of it, had they been more attentive, taking care of themselves, following with their primary care doctor on a close basis, okay? There's a very high likelihood a lot of those patients would never get to see me.
What are the numbers? I mean, if we're talking about hypertension and blood pressure, what are the numbers that we really need to be focused on?
So I like our patient, you know, our audience to think about it as it's not an all or none, and there is not one magic number. So if you go to the strict criteria, let's take blood pressure, for example, okay? We treat patients over 140, over 90, 140 on the top number, 90 over the bottom, but we have really been evolving. And now we don't accept 140 anymore because we have learned that for every 10 points increment or decrement from 140, we actually do reduce your risk an extra about 8% for heart attack or stroke. And so if you're at 120 and you're at 140, well, maybe, and actually the new guidelines say 130 to 140 is mild hypertension or borderline hypertension. But the point I'm trying to make here is, let's say you're someone with a diagnosis of high blood pressure and you measure this 138. Well, if it's consistently 138 and you're a 40-year-old man or woman, that is not okay. We really want you at 40 years old to be 110 to 120. Mm. Because over years, that's going to materialize into a lower risk of stroke and heart attack, okay? On the other hand, you know, if my father is 88 and his blood pressure is 142, well, the incremental risk over his lifespan is going to be substantially lower, and then I'm going to be a lot less aggressive. So we size up the intervention to the size of the risk, the total risk of the patient, but also to the trajectory of that patient. And as such, in a young lady like yourself, I'm going to be a lot more aggressive, like in my dad, on the other hand, where I'm going to accept a little bit higher number in trade-off for maybe a little bit less side effect of a medicine.
Okay.
Now, that's the number for blood pressure. We can talk about cholesterol. You know, cholesterol, you know, there is no normal for cholesterol. There is target ranges for different patient populations, okay? So, for someone who is totally healthy, non-smoker, non-diabetic, okay, no other risk factors as we identify them. We'll talk about that in a second. We accept a total cholesterol of 200 and 230 maybe, especially if the breakdown of their cholesterol is also favorable, where they're blessed with good high cholesterol. I want the patients to remember, the audience, H stands for high density, but also stands for the cholesterol we want high, because that's the one that protects you. So HDL, when you look at your numbers, that's a good one. That's a good guy, mm-hmm. okay? Or good girl, okay? So we want H. We want the H to be higher, the HDL. L is, that's a bad guy or girl. We want the L to be low. LDL, we want lower. So we as doctors look at your ratio of LDL to HDL. Because if you're blessed genetically with a very high HDL, then it could very well be that you're a person who could live with a cholesterol of 230 and an HDL of 70 or 80 and be totally fine, not require any medicine, okay? On the other hand, if your total cholesterol is even 210, but your HDL is 30, and your LDL as a result of that is over 150, then we're gonna be pretty nervous, especially if we add to that one extra risk factor, like a family history, or like diabetes, or like smoking. And now suddenly we're talking about, no, this is not okay. We need to treat here, mm-hmm. not just with diet. So it's really, it's kind of sizing up the intervention to the patient, and it's different intervention and different, threshold for every patient. And the primary care doctors are very good about this too. It's not just the cardiologist.
Right, right. So it's definitely not one size fits all. I mean, everybody's going to be different and their numbers are going to look different. So I think that was a really great explanation of that. Dr. Khatib, can you give us the difference between heart attack and stroke?
Yes. Definitely. And I think many of our audience probably have a perception of it. A heart attack is an abrupt blockage in one of the major three heart vessels. Okay. A stroke is an abrupt blockage in one of the small vessels in the brain. Okay. But the brain is such important piece of real estate that even a tiny bit of damage creates a substantial deficit. So a heart attack, the damage is restricted to the heart. When it happens, if it's not treated abruptly and timely, there'll be damage and the heart muscle will lose some of its function. A stroke, on the other hand, again, if not treated abruptly, we will lose some of the brain function and mass. And you can immediately kind of imagine what that would lead to. Now, God was extremely gracious how he built us, how he created us. And, you know, even somebody who has a heart attack and loses 10% of their muscle function, if we can really pick up now the slack on prevention and preserve the 90% or 80% or even 70% that they're left with, most of the time with appropriate medical management, those people are going to live a good, productive life. They're not going to run marathons if they lost 30%, but they'll be able to take up one flight of stairs or two. They'll be able to walk at a good pace, you know, for 2 miles. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to take a leisurely swim. Stroke, on the other hand, depends on where that critical small blockage was. If it's in your area of speech, you know, you could lose speech forever. Okay, you could lose the ability to understand forever. You could lose the ability to move your dominant or non-dominant arm or leg forever. Or you could recover partially or fully. It depends, again, on the magnitude and how quickly you present to healthcare.
We are talking with Dr. Yazang Khatib from First Coast Cardiovascular Institute. And now, Dr. Khatib, is there symptoms that patients should be looking for, especially with a heart attack?
Absolutely. So again, you gauge the symptoms based on your background. So I ask our audience, first and foremost, please know your metrics. Okay. You must be responsible for knowing your metrics, because the symptoms for heart attack, most of our audience knows it. Okay. Everybody talks about chest pain, but it's not just chest pain. It's really any discomfort in the chest, in the upper belly, in the neck, or the lower jaw, even in your arms, it could be a heart attack. Okay. Now, you gauge that to your background. So if I have a 30-year-old, otherwise healthy lady coming with a chest pain, even if it's severe, that is going to be very unlikely to be a heart attack. On the other hand, if I have a 55-year-old, same lady, but has been a smoker for 20 years, is diabetic, has bad cholesterol, and she comes with a chest pain that is less severe, or that she might even rate as a discomfort or a pressure, okay? Frequently, it is not a pain, it's a pressure, okay? Then I'm going to take that pain a lot more seriously, and that is going to be likely to be your heart attack. Okay, now frequently, the chest pain itself is not the issue, and I'm making the mistake of calling it a pain. I really like our audience to think about the concept of discomfort or pressure or an unusual new feeling in your chest. Okay, indigestion, some people feel it like. Mm-hmm. Some people call it heartburn. I mean, I've seen it all. Okay, and some people, it's not even in the chest at all. It's just a jaw discomfort that is new, that doesn't make sense. If it is a jaw, it's going to always be the lower jaw. It's never the upper jaw, okay? Mm-hmm. If it is an abdominal discomfort, it's always going to be the upper abdomen.
Okay.
And what we call the epigastric area. It's not going to be in your lower belly. It's not going to be, you know, in your pelvis. So, but these are the kind of discomfort you're looking at. You start to add to them your risk profile, and then you add what I call kind of higher risk features. If that same discomfort is associated with any element of shortness of breath or a new cold sweat, that's going to make it just now its likelihood of this kind of pain being an actual heart attack is going to go ever more higher. Okay. If there's a collapse, if there's a fainting, that makes it even more likely to be a serious heart attack. So it's a scale. It's really a scale with clear cut symptoms. Somebody comes, diabetic smoker with chest heaviness and shortness of breath and cold sweats, that's a heart attack. They've proven otherwise. Okay. Mm-hmm. 25-year-old healthy person otherwise comes with severe pain, you know, none of the other symptoms, is unlikely to be a heart attack. I hope that was kind of helpful, not confusing.
Yeah, no, very, very helpful. Dr. Yazang Khatib from First Coast Cardiovascular Institute is our guest today as we are discussing heart health. Stick around. We are going to come back with Dr. Khatib, and we're going to talk about some other factors and risks of cardiovascular disease in adults. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about the healthcare issues that are important to you. Whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years, we're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. According to Million Hearts, which is a national initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes within 5 years, and is co-led by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, every 34 seconds in the U.S., an adult dies from cardiovascular disease. In this episode, we're going to talk with a primary care provider and a cardiovascular physician about the preventive measures we should be taking to keep our hearts healthy and strong for years to come. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio. Joining us is Dr. Yazan Khatib, the president of First Coast Cardiovascular Institute. And Dr. Khatib, in the first segment, we had a great conversation about prevention, knowing your numbers, what is a heart attack. Now, what some people may not know is that a major risk of cardiovascular disease in adults is lower limb amputation. I mean, this sounds extreme.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so here's the deal. Amputation, or more importantly to the audience, the open wounds that lead to an amputation are not as much a risk of a heart attack as they are a marker of the horrible process of peripheral arterial disease, blockage of the leg vessels, which basically is the same blockage that occurs in the heart vessels too. So what happens many times is someone who has not listened to Michelle's show, has not taken care of his or herself, okay, has smoked for too long, had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, what have you, develops a lot of blockage in their legs that lead them to where they cannot walk as much distance. So they slow down, which also makes the cholesterol go higher, the sugar go higher. And as a result, they start to develop more and more blockage in their legs. But then it gets to be a point where the blockage in the leg is not just impeding the ability to do a good walk. It's now impeding the viability of their skin at the tips of their toes or at the heel, and they end up with a wound. Well, so the wound here is a marker of something that's been going on for a while, that the patient, because the process is kind of slowly progressive, frequently ends up attributing it to, well, I'm getting older, well, I'm getting heavier, well, this, well, that, and they don't seek attention until it's so advanced to where they have now a wound. Mm. When they come to us with a wound, it's not so much that the wound is a risk factor for heart attack itself. It's the wound is basically telling us this patient has so much blockage to where now they're ulcerating their feet. That means they're very high risk for similar blockage in their heart and very high risk for heart attack or sudden cardiac death or heart failure. Is that helpful?
Very, very helpful. I mean, is this a common practice in other places?
So luckily, through a lot of advocacy, we're starting to have more and more, you know, patients and physicians and start to pay a lot more attention to blockage in the legs and address it earlier on to where hopefully we're starting to prevent some amputations, okay? Now, there are situations where, God bless you.
Thank you.
There are some situations where a small amputation is important and necessary. Somebody has a wound and it's gone too long and there's infection within the bone. They have to take the tip of the toe off or one toe off. Sometimes that is necessary, okay? And that's okay as long as they have the good blood flow to heal what's left behind, and we leave them with what we call a walkable foot. Okay, so they can remain independent, remain active. But the vast majority of amputations otherwise, especially when we talk about a total foot amputation, or what we call in medical terms as below the knee amputation, or worse yet, a total leg amputation, what we call above the knee amputation, those tend to be very problematic from the perspective of maintaining long-term independence. And those are the ones that we really want to fight tooth and nail, basically. And frequently, thank God, with today's technology, there is the interventional doctors who are willing to put the great effort it takes to open those vessels that have been occluded for a long time, reestablish flow and preserve a limb and prevent an amputation.
Yeah. So what steps do you guys take at FCCI to prevent this?
So obviously, it would be nice if we get the patients ahead of time so to prevent them from getting an ulcer and blockage to begin with. But for those who come to us with that extreme of presentation, we take it very seriously. We call a foot wound a foot attack, like a heart attack. So we bring the patients very quickly. We test them, usually with ultrasound, to define where exactly the blockage is. And then we go ahead and go with what's called catheter-based intervention or endovascular intervention. So either from their wrist or from their groin, we numb up the spot, we go with a catheter, basically like an IV, but it goes in the artery. And then the nice thing about the body is all the arteries are interconnected. So even if the blockage is in the thigh, once I get from anywhere, whether it's the wrist or the groin or the foot, I can get to that blockage. I can probe it, and depending on its nature, either do almost like a rotator type of job, what we call the medical terms atherectomy, or place a stent, which is like a metal scaffold that kind of pushes the plaque away and restores a nice cylindrical lumen to the vessel and restores normal blood flow. One way or another, basically, we restore flow. Sometimes we use laser, whatever it takes, depending on the anatomy. The bottom line is we've got to restore normal blood flow. And once we do, then it works very well. Then the wound that was not healing, the pain that was incessant, the wound starts to heal, the pain goes away, and the patient can go back to recover function. And right afterwards, as we address that sort of what we call full attack, very quickly after that, for simultaneously we're checking on the patients for heart, if they don't have any cardiac symptoms, we usually do some screening tests to make sure they're not high risk for, you know, succumbing, God forbid, to a heart attack or stroke or sudden cardiac death. So the goal here is not to just save the foot, but to really save life as well.
Right.
We go through rigorous education. We insist on, you know, better healthy living. And we understand it's not all or none. Some patients cannot do it all, but at least we push them as hard as we can so they do what's best for them. And the vast majority of patients, they do listen, they do understand, and they're very appreciative of the, you know, sincere advice. Not all of them can quit smoking right away.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, most of them do cut down substantially. We still push, you know, prescribing medicine. We keep, you know, counseling. And we've had pretty good success. A lot of them do quit smoking. A lot of them do start to take care, better care of their diets, do comply with the medications much better than they used to. You know, they've been burned once, and now they've been given a new lease on life, a new lease on their foot, you know, a new lease on ability versus disability. So most patients, as we persevere with them, they persevere back with us, and it works very well as a team effort to save them and save their life and save their life.
Yeah, I would think that is something that you would definitely want to do moving forward, is make some changes, make some healthy changes so that you don't have to go through that again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Dr. Khatib, are there new advances in prevention, you know, heart health prevention that you want to talk about today?
So, I mean, luckily on the cholesterol side, so let's go back. What are we trying to prevent? We're trying to prevent blockages. We haven't talked about heart diseases that are not related to blockage today, and that probably should require another day. You know, the rhythm issues, the AFib, heart failure issues. But on the blockage end, it's predominantly diabetes, smoking, and cholesterol that we are fighting against, okay? And both diabetes and cholesterol are very directly related to diet and weight and level of physical activity. So the more physically active we are, the more attentive we are to our diet, the less likely we are to gain weight, less likely we are to get diabetes, to get bad cholesterol, the less blockage we're going to have. You know, it doesn't mean that we're not going to have blockage at all. It all depends also on our genetic predisposition and on our age. Because some of the process of developing blockage, think of it as a wear and tear, as a degenerative process in the vessel. It's going to happen no matter how good we are as we age. But if we get a horrible blockage when we're 100, it's very different than having a horrible blockage when we're 30 or 35. Mm-hmm. And believe me, we're seeing people. The youngest man I had to put a stent in was 28 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I could not believe it. Yeah. I mean, I had very bad diabetes, coupled with smoking. So very proud of him to say he really took this as a very serious warning, like I should. And the minute we fixed his blockage, his foot pain went away, and his sore heel, I really took it very seriously. His A1C came down, he stopped smoking. So all those things, I would say that the new advances on the cholesterol side, we have new medications for those who cannot tolerate the statins that most of your audience are probably familiar with.
Right.
And few people can cause muscle aches. There are new medications that are injectable that cause absolutely no muscle pain, cause absolutely no liver issues. I would say for 10% or so of the patients who cannot tolerate statins, it's very nice to know that we have those newer options. You know, otherwise, as far as giving people, you know, aspirin or other super aspirins, you know, like blood thinner type things to prevent clots, there has not been very major advances there. The old medications have worked very well. There's been new medications on the heart failure front, you know, because once you have been hit once, Now we focus with your what we call secondary prevention. You already have a process. Now we want to prevent, God forbid, the next heart attack. So that's also prevention. And there we start to give you incremental medications that are focused on that. And we've had a lot of success there. You know, there's been a lot of new modalities to reduce risk of sudden cardiac death, to reduce risk of somebody with a heart attack progressing to heart failure. You know, and those include not just medications, such as procedures. And it's a very exciting time to be practicing cardiovascular medicine. We can offer so much to the patients. And if they reciprocate back with their 2 cents worth of will, perseverance, you know, compliance, gosh, it's so much different than 50 years ago.
Well, I agree. I mean, the advances have come so far. And I know you were at one point very involved, or maybe you still are, with the American Heart Association. And I think with the football player, Damar Hamlin from the Buffalo Bills, and just knowing CPR, do you want to touch on that a little bit for our audience today?
Absolutely. And actually, I was just on the phone this morning with Dr. Schrader, who is the chairman of the local board for AHA. I was past president. I'm still on the board. Absolutely. I think CPR, everybody should learn how to do CPR, because you never know when the time is going to come where you're going to save somebody, literally save somebody. Because when the heart stops, okay, we have that very short window. We're very blessed to be in the U.S. where 911 will get us professional help within usually less than 7 minutes. But during those 7 minutes, what happens by those people around us will really make every bit of difference, whether we're going to live or die. And more importantly, to be honest with you almost, is whether we're going to live with an intact brain or brain dead, you know, or partially impaired, you know, as a result of injury to the brain from lack of blood flow. So when you can have people around you initiate CPR immediately until professionals come on board and take it to the next level, that makes a huge difference to the ability to save lives. And many of those, like you just mentioned, in the football player's case, many of those are totally healthy, you know, young people otherwise, that would be given a brand new lease on life just because somebody by them had taken the time, the initiative to learn. So American Heart Association is pushing very hard for the schools, for the public to really get engaged with this. Because it could very well be that it's your next of kin, it's your brother or sister, God forbid, that you're saving.
Right. And CPR's come a long way. I mean, it's I remember when I first learned it as a young adult, you know, you had to do the breaths and the chest pumps and stuff. And it has definitely come a long way from that.
I agree 100%.
Dr. Yazan Khatib is our guest today, and he is the president of First Coast Cardiovascular Institute. And when we come back, we're going to continue with Dr. Khatib. We're going to learn about what's new in value-based care. And we're also going to touch upon some more of the preventive stuff and recap what we've already discussed. So stick around. Millennium will continue with Medicare Connect Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about the healthcare issues that are important to you. Whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years, we're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. According to Million Hearts, which is a national initiative to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes within 5 years and is co-led by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, every 34 seconds in the U.S., an adult dies from cardiovascular disease. In this episode, we're going to talk with a primary care provider and a cardiovascular physician about the preventive measures we should be taking to keep our hearts healthy and strong for years to come. Our guest is Dr. Yazan Khatib from First Coast Cardiovascular Institute. And Dr. Khatib, we have covered a lot of information, and we're going to recap some of that here in just a minute. But, you know, is the ER our only option when we're experiencing cardiac symptoms?
So, great question, Michelle. And it's been real fun to chat with you today. No, the ER is not our only option. I think when patients are in doubt and are really concerned, and especially, again, I go back and I would say, know your metrics. If you're a high-risk patient and you're coming with symptoms along the line we talked about and your doctor is not really available, or you really think you're having a heart attack, you definitely should go to the ER. But I would say for the vast majority of patients, that's not how things happen. We go to the ER all the time, and we see a lot of patients who really probably could have been handled at a place of service that's more convenient, less costly, without clogging up the ERs. I mean, our ERs are really always overwhelmed. And so we're blessed in this town to have wonderful hospitals, wonderful ERs, and that's great. I would say the advances in technology, the advances in medications, the advances in diagnostics are enabling us now to do more and more on a totally outpatient basis. So let's go, for example, talk about that one example of patient who came with a gangrenous toe, okay? That patient in my practice is routinely treated as an outpatient. We'll bring them, we do their ultrasound, we set up their procedure next day, we fix them, we do their quote-unquote, you know, plumbing so that now they have good flow to the foot. Their wound doctor sees them as an outpatient, they heal, and without ever setting foot in the hospital, 9 times out of 10. Some of those people come with a gangrene and they have infection that's really concerning. Right away, we admit them, okay? So it all depends. I would say, like, that's an example. Another example, somebody who starts to notice, you know, some bleeding, chest discomfort, it lasting only minutes at a time, it's new onset, that man or woman has those factors, but they're not having that sustained pain that prompts an ER visit. Okay, well, if they present quickly to their primary care doctor will elicit a quick referral, we'll see that patient within a day or two. Many times we've been able to take those patients in, do their testing. If negative, they're reassured, we're reassured, we're done, no ER needed. If positive, we do their heart catheterization as an outpatient. We encounter that blockage, we fix it as an outpatient. Unless it's technically complex, then that minority would admit to the patient, like to the hospital, like we should. And this way we attain best outcome, but in a value-based environment to where the patient is not having to have the apprehension of going to the hospital every time. Mm-hmm. Rather, we reserve the hospital for those who really need it, and we treat in a lower cost of care setting those who are totally legitimate for such approach with the rapidly evolving and enabling technologies.
Mm-hmm. Right. I understand what you're saying. It makes sense. I mean, it's safer, the outpatient, I would think.
I wouldn't necessarily say safer or not safer. I would say it depends on the patient. Yeah, of course, when you go in the hospital, there's potential for hospital-acquired conditions. But then again, I mean, we really are lucky to have good hospitals in town to where those are less of an issue. If you're sick, you need to be in the hospital. The office is not a safer place. If you're sick, if you need an intensive care unit, if you're having a clenching chest pain that's not going away,
right?
You should not be going to the office. You should be going to the ER. That's what you should be calling 911.
Right, absolutely.
But on the other hand, a lot of the patients we round in the hospital, a lot of the patients we see, there are patients who've been having chest pain for like 3-4 weeks. Well, don't wait 3-4 weeks and then suddenly you get one bad spell that scares you to go to the ER. You start to have funny pains here and there. Call your primary care doctor. It could be just a reflux thing. Mm-hmm. It could be heart, you know. Those are the patients that are the majority of the patients that are really, I would say, overutilizing our emergency rooms. And then they end up with high deductibles and high cost, which adds a different kind of chest pain.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but so I would say, you know, it all boils down to following common sense, knowing your risk profile, listening to your body. You have new symptoms, you go to your primary care doctor before they become a real issue that might force you into the ER. And when in doubt, if it's really something you feel serious, you should go to the ER. But I'm here to tell you that if you are attentive, okay, and proactive with your primary care doctor, chances are, honest to goodness, that maybe 7 out of 10 ER visits would really be avoided. And those issues that you went to the ER with could have been handled with less copay, less headache, you know, less stress in a totally controlled environment in the office or the outpatient cath lab or the surgical center or whatever it may be. And now then we reserve the ER to the real sick ones. And then when they go to the ER, they're not waiting 6 hours because it's, you know, clogged with another 7 patients that didn't need to be there.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Yazan Khatib from First Coast Cardiovascular Institute, what are some things we'd like to leave the listener with today during Heart Health Month as far as preventative and screenings? What are the takeaways we'd like to leave today?
Well, number one, please know your metrics, okay? You all know what's in your bank account. You all know what's on your credit card. Well, you got to know also what's on your, you know, cholesterol credit card and what's on your sugar bank account and what's your blood pressure. You got to know those numbers. So be educated. We live in North America. We're very blessed, but we cannot be so reliant on just the system to take care of us. We need to take care of ourselves. We have to own it. That's number one. Number two, visit with your primary care doctor, okay? Even if you're healthy every couple of years, if you're a young, healthy person, but if you have risk factors, then at least once a year, it's very important because they're going to figure out issues before they become my issue, okay? And believe me, we're very busy. We love to see patients. That's what our passion is for. But if more patients end up being taken care of to where they don't need us, nothing makes me happier. That's good. That's fine. There's plenty of work. Okay, so and then number three, you know, if you start to encounter issues, then exercise common sense. We're heading into God knows what kind of economy. And so you don't necessarily need to spend more, and especially if you address things preemptively. And you could do a lot of your care in settings that are less costly, less stressful, and with equally good, if not better, outcomes. And number four, if things don't make sense, thank God we have tremendous number of very good cardiologists and cardiovascular doctors in town, but occasionally doctors in every specialty are like every other human being. You know, if you don't feel like your issues are being addressed, then get a second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that applies if you come to me and you don't feel I'm taking good care of you, go get a second opinion. Sometimes the patients come and we don't get the real story from them, and we're humans. We could miss issues too.
Mm-hmm.
But if the patient knows their risk profile and they know they're high risk, but nobody's figuring out their issues, then, you know, get a second opinion for those small minority where the question is not answered yet.
Well, how can folks reach out to you guys? I have firstcoastcardio.com as your website. Super thorough. All your physicians are listed on there, and everything that you do, you can schedule online too. I noticed that. How else can people get in touch with you?
And they can call our number. The office is 904-493-3333. And they can also ask their primary care doctor to refer them to us. We'll be privileged to take care of them. And thank you so very much for giving me the opportunity to address your audience today, Michelle.
Oh, Dr. Khatib, I thank you so much for your time and your expertise and just your explanations. It really does make you think, and it's very easy to follow. And, you know, the heart's a really important muscle. So thank you for that. The conversation will continue next time on Medicare Connect Radio. Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. We want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more and schedule your next primary care visit at millenniumphysician.com. In good health, I'm Michelle McCormick. Have a great day.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.